Hey everybody, it's Ben Bailey here. Another fantastic episode of Tall But True. I'm here with my co-host, Mr. DC Benny, who's tapping his headphones. Oh, you got to turn on your amp. The switch all the way to the left. Flip it up.
Flip it up.
Let's hello, see. Hello.
Ah, there we go.
Ah, there we go, man. It works.
Still with the technical difficulties.
There's audio issues. So many audio issues. Now they're happening in the studio. Another great episode of Tall But True. DC Benny is here.
Yes.
How are you, man?
I'm chilling, man.
Chilling. You feeling good?
Yeah, man.
Drove it's a nice out summer here. Day. You look a little tired.
Yeah, well, you know, the life this week is kicking my ass.
Did you have a big night out?
No, just yesterday kicked my ass and I didn't sleep well. So now I'm here.
Oh, yeah.
And had some green tea ready to go. And you survived your hockey skirmish.
Yes.
So that's good.
Yeah. Yet again, I almost killed a man on the ice at my weekly hockey game last night.
But I'm excited. We got a good guest yet again.
We have a good guest. He's sitting here wondering when we're going to say his name and bring him into the conversation. It's Rory Albanese, everybody.
Thanks. I was actually just blown away by how fantastic both of your voices are. You know, you guys have like these really good, like, yeah.
I'm really working on mine.
DC's voice.
How radio can you be?
Mine is easy listening.
You have a great voice too, man.
Well, I'm trying now because I'm hanging out. I usually sound like this.
Hey, it's Rory Albanese.
Hey, guys. Thanks for
having
me.
Are you guys doing a show or something?
I love going on the road. I don't love going on the road, but I love going on the road and going in to do morning radio.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you sit down and the guys, it's like Gator and the Monkey Man. And the
Todd and Phil.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, ladies.
And then you get to hit them with your radio voice.
Yep.
And well, they're like, oh, shit.
The best thing about that, man.
Yeah,
but the best thing about it is you always have to do radio at like 7 in the morning.
Yes.
And I'm usually hungover. So I've got that like Johnny Cash.
Yeah, that real grovelly NFL voice.
Yeah.
Nick Nolte.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, good morning. How you guys doing today?
Foley.
I used to do an impression of Nick Nolte. It was Nick Nolte buying shoes. It's like the only impression I ever did. It was this. I go, let me try that in a 12. That was it.
A buddy that I used to work super funny dude, this guy Jimmy Don, used to do Nick Nolte impression, and it was him waking up to a phone ringing, and he's looking for his phone, and then ultimately it's in a pizza box. You know, his phone.
He's like, God damn it, where's my phone? You know, and then, it's in the pizza box. You know?
It's like, he's a good impression to
that's
do.
That's exactly how Nick Nolte wakes up every day.
He's like the, I love that guy, man. He's like just like the ultimate, like kind of gruff, tough guy.
I used to just have
angry about everything all the time. And
what's the movie with him and Eddie Murphy in the cops?
48 Hours.
He was like a cool white guy. He was a cool white guy. He wasn't a nerdy white guy.
Yes.
He didn't take shit.
Yeah.
He didn't take shit.
God damn it.
That's the whole movie.
God damn it, Foley.
I used to have Axel Foley.
It's Beverly Hills Cop, though.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It's Reggie Hammond.
Reggie Hammond.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. I was acting like Judge Reinhold for a minute, wasn't I?
Bailey's an encyclopedia.
That would be an impression.
Yeah. Is there anything
do a Judge Reinhold impression.
Is there anything Ben Bailey can't do?
I'm not much of a poker player.
Well, I'd be surprised. But I used to have a total obsession with Robert Loggia for the same exact reason.
Oh, no way. I love that guy.
Yeah, and I got to know him.
No way.
Yeah, for a friend of mine worked for this author, and Robert Loggia's wife was like optioning her book or something. So I got to have dinner with Loggia one night, and it was like, he passed away a few years ago, but I got to know him over the years. Like, he'd come to New York and be like, Rory, let's grab a beer. Like, Loggia! It was like the coolest thing ever.
Dude, he's in a lot of great stuff.
Yeah,
man.
He's Robert Loggia. But he talked like that. He would tell these stories and be like, I'm like, Robert, like, what? And he'd be like, call me Bob, you know? And I'd be like, what are the other actors you know? Like, you get along with them? Are you kidding me? Actors are the salt of the earth, you know? Like, everything he said was exactly the quotable way you want. Yeah. What Robert Loggia says.
Gravitas to it.
Yeah, that's too. Those are the actors I'm always more of a fan of, like those like grizzled character actors who've just been in everything, but nobody really knows them, you know.
Jack Warden. I remember that guy?
No, who is he?
He's kind of he would fall into that group.
Yeah.
He's in a million movies. You'd know him if you saw him.
Mm-hmm. Brian Cox is one of those guys.
Burt Young.
Yeah. Burt Young.
Perfect.
Yeah,
Eli Wallach.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
I love those dudes.
This is a new game show.
Yeah. They're not famous, like, oh my God, so and so is here, but they're like famous. Yeah. You know?
They're the guy, like, if you see him on a plane or in the airport or something, you're like, who is that?
Yeah.
Dude?
Why do I know that guy?
Yeah. My wife always recognizes him. I don't recognize him because they walk by with a baseball hat, and she's like, "Do you know who that was?" And I'm like, "No, the guy walking the German Shepherd. Do you know who that was? He lives in the neighborhood, like Willem Dafoe. She would always see Willem Dafoe.
West Village. I used to live in the West Village. Willem Dafoe, I would see like twice a week.
Yeah. And Philip Michael Thomas also when we were in Brooklyn Heights for some reason.
That's a great one.
She'd be like, "That's the dude from Miami Vice. I didn't even notice the baseball hat.
Was that who that is? Yeah. I couldn't place the name. He's Tubbs.
Tubbs. Yeah.
What else? Is that like the only thing he really is known for?
I don't think
for?
He ever did anything else.
Maybe in a handful of other things. I don't remember anything, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not no offense.
I'm sure there was a lot of stuff, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure he had a thriving career outside of Miami.
I don't know that he did.
That no one knows about.
Maybe he had a thriving career in like real estate, but I don't know that it was in acting. Yeah.
I love the random weird people that you see in New York. Not necessarily celebrities, but there's always this one dude. I lived in the West Village for a while, too, for like 5 years or something. And there's always this dude that would drive around playing a trumpet. You ever see that guy?
On a bike?
No, in this old car, like an old classic car from the 60s.
Would he mount it on the steering wheel or how did
he? No, he's just driving, holding the steering wheel with one hand and just playing his trumpet while he's driving. I would see that guy all the time, man.
I always find it interesting that you can do anything else when you're driving except talk on your cell phone.
Yeah,
like shouldn't the law just be
play the trumpet?
But shouldn't the law just be you can't do anything else? Like, why is it so specific to cell phones? Like, I see people putting on makeup, everything else, playing a trumpet.
Everybody's eating.
It's just playing a trumpet.
I've seen people reading.
Yeah, me too.
In the traffic, guy reading a book. While he's driving on the highway
in traffic. I've seen that. Yeah. But it's funny. It's like you get a ticket for on your cell phone, but he's just playing a trumpet.
Yeah. But every day, this guy would drive around, and I'd see him. When he was like coasting up to a light that was red or whatever, he'd have both hands off the wheel and playing the trumpet.
There was a guy in my old neighborhood, and I never understood this. He would go in this parking lot, and it was one of the enclosed ones, and he would play the bagpipes every morning.
Wow.
It would just go. That wasn't everyone. It was like once a week.
In a parking garage?
In a parking garage. He would just go there, stand in a parking space. That's what it was. Yeah. But you would hear it.
Maybe because his wife was like, you're going to play those things. Go right. somewhere else.
You better go not underground. Here. You better go below the earth.
Yeah, he paid the guy. Can I come in and play my pipes?
He pays $4.50 a month to park his bagpipes.
He pays for a spot. So he
it
has
says
a place
on the sign, like SUVs, 500, bagpipes, 650.
They're extra because they're so annoying. I think they're actually cool bagpipes, but very moving.
Yeah.
Like
you never like throw on a bagpipe album.
You're
at home. Like, you know what I want to hear?
It's a little. The songs are a little similar. They're a little similar. Yeah. Bagpipe songs.
But. I had a neighbor that played the bagpipes at my old house, the house I lived in before this one. A neighbor that would play the bagpipes. It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
He didn't play it all the time, but once in a while, if you were sitting outside, you could hear him playing it.
And yeah,
it was all right. It wasn't bad, you know?
That's and then there's like a Scottish guy who's like, they're saying goodbye their own way, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's very melancholy.
Yeah, it is.
I'm like, did a pirate die or something? Yeah. Every Sunday when this guy would play, it felt like it was a very brave funeral or something. But,
The old bagpipes and the...
New York has got interesting characters, and there's
like,
often famous people if you know where, you know.
But I
if
feel
you're
like
looking
those,
around, you can see them.
Those people, those weirdos of New York are becoming less common, which is
I think you're right.
You know, it's like I see, there's a guy that I see sometimes in the West Village on my way down to the cellar who's always wearing like you know, he's like probably a 60-year-old dude wearing like a pink tutu and riding a scooter.
Oh, I've seen that guy.
You know what I'm talking about? And he's always riding a scooter, like a
wait, what neighborhood?
Like a razor scooter. It's down in the West Village. I don't I don't live down there anymore, but you know, I'm down there a couple nights a week, and you know,
scooter and a pink tutu.
Yeah, but it's like
because there was a guy up by the comic strip that used to run by or rollerblade by wearing a tutu.
Yeah,
we talked about him on an episode.
That guy, but I've seen the other guy.
Oh, you've seen this other guy.
It's a different.
Might be the same guy.
No, I doubt it.
I don't think
that there's just a culture of that we're not really into.
It's a big thing for people who want to fly below the radar. You know, just a subtle pink tutu.
They probably all know each other, but it's a different guy.
Tutu meetings.
They do it shifts.
Frank,
shift work.
How are you, Bill?
Nice you're up. You. Put your tutu on. You got West Village from midnight to 4 a.m.
Fill up your scooter ties.
Tuck in your ball.
You got Upper East Side tomorrow night. We're good for
those
levels.
You guys
can take your headphones off.
Those guys always remind me of the there's something about that New York City vibe, you know, where you're like, oh, I kind of like that. There's just a weird guy.
There's so many crazy dudes in New York City, man. You could hardly miss them, especially like you're saying, if you go back 10 years, 15 years.
Oh, God, yeah. And you still see, but the thing is, you know, once they're entrenched, they don't leave the neighborhood. I think we talked about this before, but there was that yelling guy. You know the yelling guy in the village? He looks like a Vietnam vet. He's kind of like, and he's got, I just saw him a week ago. I hadn't seen him in a long time.
Still around.
But this is my favorite yelling guy thing. This dude, he comes up and he kind of asks for money, but he kind of doesn't. He's got like his First Blood Rambo jacket on.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
He starts screaming.
Dude, he's so loud, that guy.
He's so loud. He looks a little like John Voight, a little bit. And
what does he yell?
I don't know. It's just angry anti-government shit.
He'll scream at people's faces. Oh, in front of the cellar, he does it.
In front of the cellar.
Bouncers chase him away now.
So I hadn't seen him. The last time I saw him, this was the best, man. Will Smith was filming, what's the apocalyptic movie where he's got, it's just him and the dog and there's zombies or
I Am Legend.
I Am Legend.
Yeah. So right. I guess.
He lives on the north side of Washington Square Park in that movie.
He was getting a lot of flack because he had this trailer, whatever he was living in, that took up like a whole block.
Yeah. And sounds like Pete Holmes.
It was like,
oh, really? No. When Pete shoots down there, I'm always like, Jesus Christ. Dude. Like,
the thing was
the whole street
it was
blocked
a house.
Off.
No, he doesn't have a trailer. But
this
just,
thing was a house.
Yeah,
he's one of the,
I think Will Smith is one of the last guys in Hollywood I've read. There's a few guys left, like Tom Hanks, Will Smith, those $20 million movie stars that still exist that get those trailers still. Those like double wide.
I've never seen one of those things. It's like a whole block long. Yeah. So, you know,
he's not living in it, by the way. He's just hanging out in it during the shooting. Yeah.
Well, here's what was so funny is I see the yelling guy. Everybody's looking at this thing, and the yelling guy comes along, and he's not yelling. He's just totally quiet, and he walks up to the trailer, opens the fucking door, walks in, and starts. You hear all this yelling coming.
Holy
shit! It was the funniest shit ever, man. And then eventually, you know, they escort him out, but he just was really quiet. He kind of walked up to the trailer, looked at it, opened the door. You think this is gonna be locked and
this
security
tracks.
Or whatever?
Yeah,
yeah. Walked right in. You hear all this.
Right,
God damn it! take them out of there.
Big dude
oh my
carried
God,
out.
That's fantastic.
It was great. But that's what's great about New York characters. Yeah.
Well, how about that dude he's there every night, the guy with the tinfoil hat who wants to shine your shoes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that guy's there every night. It's not even really a hat. It's almost like Viking horns or something. Yeah, made out of tinfoil.
You know what that guy's name is?
No.
Judah.
Okay. That makes sense.
I've known that guy for like 20 years.
Yeah. That's always my goal, like with the Comedy Cellar. My goal is always to just get to the level where those guys know who I am. Like, forget
the audience.
Fans. Like, it's fans. Not, I'm past that happening. I just want the dudes barking on the streets for, like, the other comedy. Like, that's just happened about 6 months ago. The dudes who every time I go from, like, one club to the other, the guys on the corner who are trying to sell tickets to the other comedy clubs, every night they're like, free comedy show, man. And finally they're like, and I haven't said anything, but finally they figured it out because I'm always walking by with a bottle of water. Like, what's up, dude? I'm like, yes.
They don't ask
me if I want to see a comedy show anymore. You know, that felt like, I'm like, well, I guess I made it.
That's kind of an embarrassing thing when they're trying to sell you tickets to another show.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
like, come on, man.
Dude. You're like, who's on it?
You're
doing like,
this.
Me?
I'm like, yeah, they're like, you want to go? I'm like, I don't know. Is there actually any spots?
I've had it happen that I was walking. I don't know why I was up there. I try to avoid Midtown at all costs.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And I was in Midtown walking, and the guy came up and said, "Got a great comedy show tonight. Ben Bailey from Cash Cab's going to be there."
Oh, really?
I was like,
"You're like that hack?
Am I?" I had no idea.
That's really
oh, that's hilarious.
Funny,
you know, he's telling that somewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
And there I was.
They're bullshitting. Those guys are bullshitting.
Well, I always think when you're...
About who's going to be on those shows.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean
I always
hear
stories.
You weren't actually on the show.
I wasn't on the show. Oh, no, he was just saying that I was there to get people to come in.
That's so funny.
Well, you hear that at, like, Dangerfields a lot. Someone gets there and they're like, well, wait a minute. Where the fuck is Susie Essman?
Yeah,
or, Seinfeld was supposed to stop by. He didn't come by. And they're like, well, who told you that? The guy in the street.
Oh, he canceled.
Yeah, that guy got fired. And he doesn't work officially in the capacity of this club anymore. He's a rogue street team guy.
Whatever,
you know?
Yeah. A rogue. He went rogue.
Yeah.
One of our street team went rogue.
That's like when they tell you when you first start. I remember I was doing bringer shows, and they always be like, yeah, there's going to be industry there. You know, and I was like 22.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's good. I need to be in front of industry. Yeah, I've been doing this. Right. I'm on my seventh set of my life.
Yeah.
And, but the industry was, you know, the industry was always like, it would be like me, because I was a PA at the Daily Show.
Right.
By the way, you're the industry. Like,
you're
wait
the
a
industry.
Minute.
So if you like your
I love that term they always say.
Yeah. The secretary of Beth Melsky or something is coming out.
They always say that. I love that term, industry. Yeah, we got an industry in the room. Oh, yeah.
And like, wow. Industry.
At this 6 o'clock bringer show?
Very likely to be a terrible audience then.
Yeah.
No one's more disdainful than industry crowds. Like, I remember going to L.A. to do showcases and stuff.
Yeah.
And the crowd would just be like,
LA's
just
tough,
so
man.
Bored.
LA
they
always
just didn't care.
LA always feels like that. Anytime I do a show out there, it always feels like people are watching you to judge you, not to. It's like when you
not
do
to
a
enjoy
comedy
it.
Festival. It's like nobody's there to like
to monetize you.
Yeah,
or
like they're like doing the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like crunching numbers. They're like, I don't know. What am I going to do with this
show.
Fucking guy? Yeah, I don't know.
He's the roommate.
Is he good at anything? Like, do you know how to use tools?
Right.
You know, like they're trying to figure out something. Yeah, it's never feels like you're just doing a show to be a comic or make people laugh.
It's weird. Yeah, it's an odd.
It's my least favorite feeling is that standing in front of people who I'm like, everyone in here. It's
I would rather have a crowd hate me than have them just not really care one way or the other.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, because
at least they're
feeling
something. You know,
you can go to war and then you don't feel like an asshole. You know what I mean? Like if they're ambivalent and you're then you look kind of like a dick. You're like, hey, what's going on? And it's like, why is this guy so angry?
Mm-hmm.
Why is he so testy? We're just, you know, we're just
they don't even know that they're the
but
reason.
If they're like, fuck you, and you're like, well, fuck you.
Exactly.
There's
all, then there's something
there's a
there.
Connection.
You can work with
there,
that.
Yeah. There's a connection.
I also think this happens sometimes when you're in certain rooms that have, like, you know what I mean? Like those rooms where, like, it's not even that many rooms aren't full, but where people are, have you ever see somebody laughing, but they're covering their mouth? Like they think like,
yes.
And you're like, no, you don't have to, like, I want you to do it out loud.
The desired response.
Yes, exactly.
Is
like,
laughter.
I don't want to be rude and laugh at these stories. It's like, no. It's, you got it. Yeah, you got it.
That's what we want.
Yeah, it's
I know
weird,
exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I called
some
people out on it.
Me too.
At the Fat Black Pussycat.
That's the room that happens in a lot.
This guy was laughing and he was trying not to.
Because I'm
like, dude, it's a comedy show.
No,
why are you trying not to laugh? That's why you're here.
There's a thing that happens now, I notice, where if you say something mildly, I wouldn't even say controversial, but like outside the standard parameters of what you're supposed to say, people that think it's funny are scared to laugh because they're worried that the people around them are going to judge them for laughing at a thing that
it's like
it
a corporate
could be,
they're
as
an accessory
racist
to the
or something.
Crime.
They're an accessory.
Yeah.
So you sort of end up in this weird. You know, like sometimes you see a couple of guys in the back, like, oh man, that's funny, but I don't want to piss off like this Tinder date I'm on or something. And you're like, well, fuck, dude. Like, you know.
I remember years ago, do you guys remember the Luna Lounge?
Yes.
Like,
totally.
I did I went
Jeff
in there.
Singer.
Jeff Singer is Jeff Singer and Dave Becky and all those guys. And I went in there and I did a character. And it was like a Brooklyn guy that was racist and misogynistic and this and that. But I went in. I went on in character, and I had this monologue, and I did it, and there were people hissing, like, ooh, and I'm like, it's not, I'm doing a fucking character.
It's satire,
you know?
Satire, yeah.
It's obviously, you know, it's a comedy show, this is not really me, and at the end, I did it, and there was a lot of hissing and whoo and he, you know, he was saying edgy shit, but it's a comic show. And at the end, after I was leaving, there was a couple of industry guys came. One guy came up in his like little William Morris tie, or whatever. He's like, "That was hilarious."
that was hilarious.
Didn't want anyone to hear him say it.
I don't want anyone to know. I thought
what
that
was character. Can you do a little of the?
It
do
was
you remember
like,
any of it?
I did something about the fucking. The roadrunner is gay. That's why the coyote chases him all over the place, because the roadrunner probably made a disrespectful comment like, "Nate's hairy balls will make you howl at the moon," but they censor that shit. That's why you hear his beep beep. You know, it was like a fucking kind of like a Dice Man-ish kind of dude. But it was I can't remember the whole. It was this long, just monologue from a day of a dude that you know, I was doing all those one man show things and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'd never experienced that where people are. Don't make the connection that you're not that guy. You know what I mean? That you
I
are
had
that happen. Guy.
I went to L.A. to have a meeting with the production company. They saw me in New York. They thought I was great for something. They fucking flew me to L.A. I go to L.A. And I get there and to the meeting. And I sit around for a little while. And then I go in. I have a meeting with a couple of the execs from the company, whatever. And they're like, "Stick around. We want you to audition. Read for this other thing that we're doing." I said, "All right." So I sit in the waiting room. I wait, and this woman comes in. She says, "Okay, here, this is something. Here's the deal. This is something a little bit unique. This isn't you just coming in and reading for something as you. What we want you to do is we're going to give you a list of things to choose from, and then you're going to do one of those characters in the audition as though you're that guy auditioning."
Jeez. That sounds like fun, though. It sounds like a challenge.
And I was like, "Oh, this is cool. Okay, all right." So I look at their list, and they're like, "You could also make up your own. If you just want to make up a character, you could do that. But remember, you're that person auditioning for the role." I'm like, "Okay."
I'm a guy who hates auditioning.
So, yeah, right? Oh, that's...
I'm illiterate Jeff. Yeah. I'm going to have an issue here.
So I was like, "I'm going to be..." And I said, "And you guys are cool." Like, the ones that they had listed were pretty extreme. And I was like, "They're not going to be offended by anything." And they get it. They set up this whole thing. So I decide I'm going to be this like manly man guy who's like maybe a little bit racist,
right?
Doesn't respect women. He's just like a real, you know,
right?
Asshole.
Like Archie Bunker's kind of dude.
And, it's like the president.
And they just forget, apparently, what they told me. So I go in there and they start interviewing me, and I'm like doing my best to stay in character. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying, like,
"Fuck these hooas."
Yeah, like I was like,
"Hey, sweet tits, what do you want to know?"
Like, "Oh boy, women ain't shit." I said to this woman interviewing me, "Women ain't shit. You know it as well as I do. If there weren't a man around, nothing would ever get done." You know, this whole thing was just all in character with this
obviously.
Great accent and everything, you know?
Yeah.
And this one woman, I'll never forget, she just walks over and she goes, "Real nice, Ben." Real nice. Thanks a lot.
What were their suggestions?
And that was it. I'm like, what were their suggested characters?
Yeah.
They were all like, one was like a Southern guy. One was like they were all like these gruff dudes.
Right.
One was like a longshoreman. Every one of them had a similar thing where it was like this very manly kind of guy.
And
then
but your choice was too much.
My choice was too much.
So
and she reacted to me. The woman who told me what to do reacted as though it was me.
As though you came in there and you were like, "I'm going to just tell you how
let me tell you how I really feel. I fucking hate women."
Yeah, right. They're gross.
You guys put me up to this.
But I learned that.
Real nice, Ben.
Yeah. With stand-up.
Real nice.
I've learned that with stand-up, especially as like an unknown... In stand-up, like if I go out there and so, you know, like the order matters so much, because if I go out there with my like more, I would say, controversial thoughts or ideas and open with that stuff, and people don't get a sense of who I am first,
you got to get
then
them to
I
like
just
you
seem
first.
Like a dick.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like I learned that the heart, I mean, is the way you learn everything with stand-up, which is like, what am I doing wrong? You know, and then somebody who's better than you was like, "Why don't you not open with that stuff that makes you sound like a racist?" So it's like,
ingratiate
they don't
yourself
know,
first.
They don't know that you're being satirical. I mean, in your case, it's absurd because I actually asked
that
you.
That was ridiculous.
I'm saying, but on stage, I've learned,
it,
come out there, give them a sense of who you are as a, you know, first for the first five, even if you're doing a 10, 15 minute set, like give them a little sense that you're not that guy before you go into those more sort of what I always call them like satirical views, because it's like you can, like I can say something almost in character to try to make a point, but if people think I'm that guy, man, especially now, it's a very like groany time to be doing stand-up. People are like, ooh.
People are very uptight.
And they're like, dude, I had you 5 seconds ago. You liked me 5 seconds ago. Yeah. And then I said
that.
We're
all laughing.
Yep. Selective stuff that's offensive and isn't. And it's hard to, it's like, well, why is that not and why is that offensive? Why is, does,
I've had
does
people,
that get
people
the
are so uptight about race.
Yeah.
I literally said the word Japanese. I described a man as Japanese and the crowd gasped. I'm like, Jesus, man.
That's,
come on.
You know, that's a...
People are
you know,
from
that's
different
a culture.
Countries.
Yeah. Like the country's
we're not
still,
all from the same place.
Still exists.
How are we going to identify them?
Yeah, you can't identify people.
If you can't even say...
Oh, no, we're getting to a point
where was a man from Earth.
Yeah, but then you can't go to a point. What do you mean by man?
Well, yeah, what do you mean
what
by
you mean,
man?
Gender thing? I don't know. You know, it's,
and
it's,
what's this Earth?
I know. It's really amazing how... it. I think it's a very challenging time to be doing it because people... You know, especially New York, all these places, like people get really, and then on the-
It shouldn't be in New York, though. Right. That's
exactly.
The place it should not be,
yeah,
of then, all places.
Yeah. But then when you go to like more hardcore, sort of like middle America, Trump kind of places, they get butthurt too. That's the thing. It's like these, all the people that say everyone's a snowflake, think that as long as it's they're, you're saying the stuff they agree with. And then the minute you go against stuff they agree with, they're like, no, unacceptable.
Like, oh, this is,
I had a lady come into a show at Mohegan Sun and say to the guy, the manager of the club before I went on, she goes, if he talks bad about Trump, I'm walking out. And he came up to me, the guy who runs the club, and was like, hey, just so you know, this old lady in there said, if you talk about Trump, and I don't talk about Trump.
Get
I,
on
I'm
your orthopedic shoes
but then
and
I,
start walking.
But by the way, but that's exactly what I did. I go, well, I guess I'm talking about Trump tonight. You know, because it's like, you're threatening to walk out of the show if I like use freedom of speech at a comedy show, you know? So it's like, I mean,
don't even come to the show.
Yeah, then don't fucking, like she's pre-warning him, if I'm made on to be uncomfortable at any moment during the show, I will leave. All right,
I will leave.
See ya.
Yeah, I've
just
had.
Go.
Doesn't like my, all of my instincts go. Well, then I'm going to spend my entire night seeing if I can get that lady to fucking leave.
But
it's like,
I've
fuck
had
you.
Critiques so afterwards where it's like, this lady after a show I did was like, you were funny. This was everything was funny except, and I have a story about this dude that was a stutterer. And he was, and it happened, and it was my life. And she's like, that stuttering thing was horrible. That was, you know, whatever. I was like, lady, that fucking happened. You laughed at the midget shit. You laughed at me talking about me and my black wife. You laughed at all that shit. But the stuttering
thing. The
one
thing that bothers you.
That happened to me. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen to you. Yep. You know, so fucking leave next time. You know, it's like, oh.
But that, to me, God. Too, is like.
That's a weird thing to be upset about.
You're right.
I'm always like, is there a specific thing in this person's life that makes
they
them
really hated a fish called Wanda?
That.
You know?
Oh, no.
They're still writing letters to the studio. But I also do think that that's the shift that occurs. And this has happened to me a few times where I'm making fun of the right. And, oh, man, everyone's laughing. And then I start making fun of the left and the same people in the front row, you know, fucking laughing their ass off a minute ago. And I stop and go, what happened? I've done this. I did this to a girl in Massachusetts. I mean, like January, I was up there and she was right in the front row. She's laughing. But very like, I don't, I'm trying to think of a way to describe her without sounding like a dick, but very like seemingly offendable, liberal-looking girl. You know what I'm saying? Like, had all of the trappings.
I'm visualizing, man.
Had all of the trappings.
I have a definite picture.
Yeah, had all of the trappings of a girl that would be mad at a guy like me 7 minutes into a date. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? And but I'm, you know, ripping on this and the right, and talking about how that, you know, how they hate gay people and all that, laughing. And then I just turn it to, like, you know, and here's what the left does.
Trashing the left.
All of
a
sudden,
bit.
I start talking about the left and, like, you know, maybe I don't want to pee next to a lady, whatever I'm saying. She goes from laughing, open, oh my God, to folding her arms and looking at me like she, and I stop the show and I go, what just happened? I need to know what just happened. Because a minute ago we had a thing.
Yeah.
And now you're looking at me like you want to walk out of here. And she's like, well, I can't in good conscience laugh at that. I said, but why could you laugh? Why could you laugh at the stuff that it's so partisan now.
People
like it's
very
becomes,
selective.
It's yeah, so then
divided.
It's like, well, look, if you're a vegan, I will laugh at meat jokes, but if you make a tomato joke, fuck you. And it's like, well, then what am I supposed to do?
You're supposed to be able to
no
laugh
pizza.
At everything.
No
yeah, it's just
jokes.
Like it's...
And maintain your opinions regardless. Yeah.
But it's there's no sense of... People have lost their sense of humor about themselves in a way that I find to be challenging. You know, it's like it makes it a very challenging thing. And even, look, you see the guys who roll into the cellar, like... You can watch that happen to anybody. I don't care how famous you are. I don't care if you're Kevin Hart or you're Louis C.K. It's not about that. Like, those guys say the wrong thing. Ooh.
Yeah. 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 Totally.
It's unbelievable.
I remember Seinfeld saying, somebody was asking him, we're sitting there at the table at the Cellar, and somebody's asking him, you know, what's it like doing stand-up with everybody knowing who you are and you being such a big star and everything? And Jerry says, they give you about 5 seconds. He goes, that's the difference. At the top, they give you about 5 seconds more.
They said in that movie Comedian, I think Colin Quinn said it when they did that movie. He said, I think he said, he's like, was it 5 seconds or 5 minutes? He was like, if you're Jack Nicholson, and everyone, and this is 2000, so Jack Nicholson was still doing shit.
5 minutes.
But it was like, yeah, but he said, like,
make it into the Comedian?
Yeah, and he goes, if you're Colin said, if you're famous and you go on stage, I think they'll give you about 5 minutes. Like, if you're Jack Nicholson, everyone loves Jack Nicholson. Five minutes, they're going to be excited he's there. But after 5 minutes, you better be fucking funny,
you
dude.
You better be fucking
And that's when
funny.
They show Seinfeld at Gotham walls. Bomb. Remember they show that scene of Seinfeld bombing at Gotham? Yeah. It's a pretty interesting movie because, you know, it's before, you know, I think that a lot of people at that his level were not going back and starting from scratch. Yeah. Like, that was a pretty, like,
he was detached.
He get detached. I remember
he
seeing him at the Cellar.
Up top.
Talking about how rich he was at the Cellar.
Yeah. Like, he'd say, things are good or whatever. A little better for me than they are for you.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, you just pissed off everyone in the room.
I know.
Everybody's like, fuck this rich bastard.
Yeah.
To be able to say that and
then come back
dig out of it is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. Well, that's how you I think that, like, digging yourself in a hole and getting out of it makes you better. But sometimes when you do it, you're like, oh, well, like, I don't have the other thing is, like, you don't have unlimited time. You don't have unlimited time on stage.
And I don't feel the imperative to dig a hole and get myself out of it.
No.
Like, you know, a lot of.
Well, I never want to do it on purpose.
Yeah,
but I've done
it. Some guys do it on purpose. Yeah, like, they dig the hole and then climb out. God bless you. That's a talent. Yeah. But I'd rather just get them to like me and let me just tell you what I got to tell you, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
I had a dark period a couple years ago where, for me, I don't know, some guys do the same act for 20 years. Yeah. For me, if I don't have some new material, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
I'm bored. I can't just recite my shit. Once it gets to its kind of final point, I have to move on. I have to come up with something new. And if I don't have something new to do at that time when I can't stand doing my old stuff, I'm in a bad spot. And you can see it. Anybody who knows me or whatever, if they're watching me on stage, would be like, holy shit, what is he fucking doing? Because I'm just trying to find something. And a couple years ago, I had a period where I was just taking the crowd, purposely taking the crowd into the most awkward, quiet. I would just be like, I would try something that wouldn't get a laugh. I'd be like, oh. That didn't go over well. And then,
just let them sit in
it
for a
while.
I
would just let everyone sit in the fucking, in the jello of awkwardness. Like, the whole room is filled with it, you know? And I kind of was in a place where I was like, I want to bring that as low as I can bring it and then try to come back.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that's it was a weird spot, but it's not like I decided to do it. It was just like, that's what was happening.
But it was a spark of fire, maybe.
Eventually it did. I found a thing that would always bring me out of that.
Right, and then you're starting to build
and
new material
And that
out
was
of
the
that.
Beginning of my new set.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
But it's such a dark place to be in. Like, when I'm trying to come up with a new chunk, it's horrible.
There is a sadistic component to stand-up, I think. But I also do find, like you said, like, you know, if I have a good set, but I'm doing material that I know I should have retired.
Right.
It doesn't, you know, like, my girlfriend would be like, oh, you seem so bummed. They had such a good show. I'm like, ah. I was like, I was so lame. Like, I went with stuff. Like, in other words, I should be past that material. And instead of going on stage and, like, challenging myself with stuff I'm working on and I want to do. Like, I'd almost rather have a mediocre, bomby set with new stuff once I made a decision. Yeah. Like, I'm done with this material. I got to move on. But then I get on stage. I'm like, let me give them the gold, you know, because I want. And it depends on the situation.
Yeah,
of course. But and it's like, you know, look, you're in a situation where you're doing, like, a set on a Saturday night or something. And you say, like, you just want to fucking kill. But I'm talking about when you have, like, I have, like, a Tuesday night midnight spot. And it's a perfect opportunity.
Yeah, Saturday night, it's hard, unless you're one of the chosen.
100%.
It's hard to be I'm just going to go on a creative limb here and work this shit out.
But like, but Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I have like, at this point, I'm like, if I have new material to work on, and I know it's, and it's not brand new, but I've like, it's close, and I don't do it, I get so pissed at myself. I'm like, you're such a, I want to say pussy, but
I don't it's also, you want it to be the right barometer.
It's illegal. Say it again. Trump re-legalized it, right?
You want it to be the right barometer for your shit, because if you try and it doesn't work, and it's just like, you're not in the right mind frame where you're confident about it or whatever, because, you know, the crowd could be really fucked up that night.
Yep.
It might be better to just kind of hit them with some old shit.
Yep.
Then, you know, put your sacrificial lamb out there and have them piss on it, and then it's like tainted.
Yes, yeah.
Then it's tainted,
you're
like, ah, I'm going to try it again, but it's fucking tainted.
But yeah, you know, it's got this funk on it from the first time you tried it. Yeah.
That's why I like that new joke show. Have you done that?
I love that show.
Yeah, I think that's great.
I haven't done that. What's
my
that?
God.
It's Thursday.
Mondays and Thursdays.
Oh, Mondays and Thursdays.
Yeah, and it's literally like an open mic at the Fat Black Pussycat for. It's an open mic for professional comedians. Is how I would describe it.
Try out new stuff.
That's the expectation. The expectation is you're not on stage.
I fucking do that on Friday and Saturday.
Well, sure. I mean, it's a but this is what's different about
this. Because I can't help it.
But it
what's now I have a new chunk. I'll work on it for a while.
Sure. Yeah. But what's different about this is you can literally go up there. The audience knows everyone's working on new material.
Right. So I like that idea.
You have a little bit of, they give you a little bit more than you would get in a normal show. And the expectation, I feel like on a Friday, Saturday night, people are paying money to see.
They want you to kill.
So it's like, look, you've been there. I'm talking specifically about the seller, but just in general, like if you're you guys have a reputation where like you're not going to not get booked again. My attitude is like, if I'm at a club on a Friday or Saturday night in New York City, like my attitude is like, I must murder, because I don't want them to be like, well, do we really need that guy in the fucking rotation? But Tuesdays, Wednesdays, like I love going out and trying. But that new joke show is great, because it's like, you just walk up there with a piece of paper in your hand. Yeah. I'm like, all right, here's one I thought of in the cab on the way over.
Just throw them out there.
Dude,
I always do that. That's what gives me my enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Is trying a new bit that I just wrote on the way to the gig.
Yeah.
And I'll do other stuff that's tried and true after.
Yeah.
But I feel like I need something new out of the gate.
Yep.
It's just me getting old, I guess.
Yeah. No. You know? No, I feel that. That's the thing is, in comedy, there is nothing better than a new thing working.
Totally.
There's nothing better than that I can think of. When a new thing works,
it's a good mood for like the revalidate. Whole night.
Oh my God, I'm buzzing for a week, man.
Because you can go through, I go through so many phases with joke writing. Where I'm just like, maybe I lost my mojo. Like, maybe that's it. Maybe all my stuff's out.
Yeah.
And like my brain's tapped.
Faucet's
and then
not
you
run.
Yeah. And then you somehow dig your way out of that. And boy, it feels good, because you start going, all right, I can still write new jokes.
I was trying to find inspiration in that same situation we were talking about. I'm like, I nothing's coming to me. And then I like a couple ideas came, and then I heard that other guys had bits about those things, and I'm like, shit, those are out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm walking down the street, and this dude just goes, hot enough for you? And I'm like, I want to kiss you right now. I'm like, yes, it's fucking hot enough for me. And you just gave me. I'm like, that's my new opening bit, is about this guy saying hot enough for you.
Yeah.
And that just opened up the door.
Yeah.
And that's
the same guy when you get in an elevator and everyone hits a button. He's like, I guess we're going local.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus Christ. Like Dr. Cliche.
That's kind of the bit. It's like, could you write something?
Just try.
You've been boring your family and friends with the same quips for 20 years.
Everyone has
write
that
something
friend,
new.
Everyone has that friend.
Yeah.
Just uses all of the like
cliche. Hot enough for you. Yeah. Yeah. It's evolved into this. I say it like 10 times in a bit. Yeah. And then at the end, I'm like, holy shit, maybe that's what happened to him.
Yeah.
It started as a joke, and then he couldn't stop saying it. I got to stop
that
saying
guy
it.
Actually won Montreal New Faces 1 year.
Got a deal.
With that bitch, because he was Montreal. It was
the
summer. Had a fucking deal.
Came out there with a little fan.
He had a deal with Sunkist or like Fanta. You know, he had some kind of an overall deal, and he just couldn't get out of it.
He's got a new show called Fire.
Yeah, exactly.
He's the next big thing, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the other component is like, you know, I try and tell the stories on stage. I try to do that.
You do, man. You are
and I take some bullets on it.
To that.
I take
but
some
I,
bullets.
I admire that, dude, because you stick to it.
Well, it's just, but when you're doing that, a lot of the times, it can be perceived as not new, because, you know, I'm tweaking out this, I'm tweaking out the jokes in it are little landmines, and then, you know, there's some that work, some that don't. You're kind of constantly fiddling with it, but it doesn't, it's like I'm I'll fiddle with a thing for like a fucking year.
Easily. You know, by the way, that's like a reasonable amount of time.
But to me, it's still kind of new because like this isn't working or this 100%. Isn't working. This isn't working.
That's how it feels. That's how it feels. But in other words, I love telling stories, and I have a few. I mean, in the hour I just did that, I really like. But then, what I like about telling stories is you could go back through that story and find five new places for jokes along the way if you keep working on it. But the problem with that is, at some point, you got to be like, "All right, I got to fucking like call this done," you know, or find out. But I feel like a year. I think that there's a thing that's happened in the last couple of years because so many of the bigger name dudes are cranking out specials like every year, year and a half. But that seems like a rush to me. Yeah. I mean, even the best George Carlin, all those guys who were doing that stuff, he did one every year.
Didn't he?
Was it two? I don't know if it was.
I thought he did an HBO special every year. Maybe it was every couple.
I think it was every, but it's always interesting when the first one that they do, where they've compiled all this material over
like
time,
10 years,
and then it's like the concentrate, and then after that, the subsequent ones.
Yeah,
it's always hard to hold up to the concentrate.
Of course.
You know, it's like how. But their guys are
same
do
with
it,
music,
you know?
Right?
Yeah, it always feels like the
Dan
second
spends
or
10 years in creating their first album, and then it's great, and everybody's like, "We need a new album in 6 months."
Yeah,
and they're like, "That doesn't work."
Yeah.
Doesn't work, man. No, it took us 10 years to make this one.
But the pace sometimes I think with comedy is like there's this expectation now of like new material needs to be coming up that quickly, and you're going, "Well, 2 years to get something." Because a year in, you're like, "It's
you
got
to do a lot,
but then
of road
give
time.
It another year." Yeah, if you're on the road every weekend. Maybe a year is a reasonable amount of time, but if you're on the road every weekend,
it'd
and then
be
you
nice
put,
to have another.
But if you put another year into that act or that bit, it's not going to get worse. Like it's only going to get tighter.
The crust is right. It's like a pie. The crust 100%. Is right. The inside's all nice and soft, and then whatever. I don't know
especially
if that's a good analogy.
The pie stand up set analogy.
I think that's a perfect analogy.
I just had some peach pie that was so fucking good.
Yeah,
is why I say that because I had some other peach pie like a week before, and the crust was like
soggy.
It's too hard.
That
the peaches were too
was
hard.
Rushed.
Yes,
that first one.
Yeah,
I only spent a couple of weeks.
You appreciate the fucking peach pie. It's why I'll wait another year. You know what I mean?
That's how I feel. But I really do think that
I'm making a peach pie,
especially if you work, especially if you're open to find, like, you know, you have to let yourself go. All right, I tell this story this way every time, but tonight I'm gonna fucking open, like, get myself in a little trouble in the middle of it or whatever. You find new stuff, but I do think that there's this like pace that's happened now where people are like, I got to do another one. So it's like, wait another 6 months. I bet it gets, you know, I bet it, because I've seen a few rushed specials on Netflix recently where I'm like, that's like one of my favorite comics. And like that bit is 6 months away from fully cooked. I've seen that, you know, and
it doesn't take away from my love of the comic,
but there is a component of like, nobody cares. Wait six more months.
I totally agree with you and I'm guilty of it. My last special, it's called Ben Bailey Live and Uncensored. You can get it on my website or on Amazon. by the way, I had a whole, like, maybe 3 months before, 4 months before I was taping, and I produced it myself and everything, so I could have pushed it back, but I just had this new chunk of stuff just came to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was so torn. I sat down, I wrote out all the material I had, and I had... For a one-hour special, I had 3.5 hours of material. And I was like, what the fuck am I going to do? I was like, time to trim fat. So I went through, I was like, anything that's not my favorite, I'm chucking it. And so I did that, and then I was like, this new stuff, I liked it.
Yeah.
That's, so much
that's
that
hard,
I was like,
man. Yeah.
I got to do it. I got to put it in there. And I put it in, and it's good. And, you know, it's a great show. I had a great show. I got a standing ovation. I did it twice, and it was awesome. Very happy with it. But that said, those bits
are better now.
They're better now.
Yes.
And they're different. And and I look back and I go, man, I wish I had just, I could go back and put the bits, the finished bits in there.
Yeah.
But then that brings up the question, when is a bit finished? I have this bit, Ben Bailey Boulevard. It's probably my, I'm probably known for that bit as much as
one of my favorite Ben Bailey bits.
Beating up hecklers and throwing them in the bathroom. as I'm filling out a job application and I put my name in the wrong spots and I have to tell the guy that I live on Ben Bailey Boulevard.
Right.
And it goes through the whole application. I may have talked about this on the show before, but so I'm off by one box
throughout the
whole application. Right. You know, my zip code is the same as the first five digits of my phone number. And
8 years after I wrote that bit, I added a line to it. Because it just happened one night. I said at the end of it, I said, yes, and yes, before you ask, my mother's maiden name is Caucasian. 8 years after. Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck?
Where did that come from?
Where did that come from? Exactly. It's been in there the whole time, you know? That's so you never know. I mean, when is a bit done?
But I do think there is a... I think that's the challenge. I mean, I think the challenge of anyone doing anything, right, is like whether you're making a... Look, the one thing that you... don't have with stand-up is a deadline, which can be tricky. In other words, you have to create your own deadlines. You have to create your... to me, it's like, for example, if you're making something for someone else, if you're making a TV show or you're making whatever it is, a movie, or even if you're painting a
podcast,
even if you're painting a mural for a restaurant, like they're like, finish by Tuesday. Yeah. Like you have a deadline. Yeah. But when you're doing...
There's some structure.
Yeah, there's structure. So when you're doing, you know, like I worked at The Daily Show for years, like we knew by like... We had a deadline. It was like, that's it. Like, that's a great joke. We're taping. Like, sorry. Like, we had to. We had to have a cutoff. Otherwise, you'll do it all day. You got to be done. So stand up, you don't have that. So you have to create your own parameters and set of rules. And I think that that's what makes some people in some ways better at it than others. Like, they're very good at going, all right, like, that's ready to go. Where that's not ready to go. Look, because you can be so you can be overly precious with something and be like, no, it needs more finesse. You're like, I don't know.
It's got a lot of balance.
Yeah, there's a balance, and you have to find it.
And establish it for yourself. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the hardest things about being a comedian.
Is endings.
Is knowing when to move on and knowing when you...
Is the lack of structure.
Yeah.
Completely. Not just in your joke writing, but in your life.
Yeah. Well, it makes it hard to...
You don't have a routine. You don't have...
You make
a
routine.
And people are like, oh, that's great. Yeah, that would be great. I'm like, well, try it for a while. And then you'll realize that it's difficult.
Listen, I've been...
You don't have boundaries. You don't have a place to be. You're kind of floating in the breeze sometimes, and it's easy to get lost.
The last year of my life has been the... I mean, I've been doing stand-up for a long time, but I've always had other jobs. I've been working in TV. I've been bouncing around doing other things. The last year of my life is the only time that I've legitimately... dropped everything else and only been doing stand-up.
Oh, it's got to feel good.
It feels really good, but I can tell you...
Must be a little scary, though, too.
Yeah, and I'm really... Like, I have days where I wake up, I'm like, what am I doing today?
Yeah. You know?
And, like, how do I make my day feel productive? And then there's days where I'm just not productive, and I'm like, don't feel guilty about it.
Yeah,
you
know,
Have a day to, like, just be a piece of shit. And then... But it's hard, man, and I really admire people who are able... to sustain that life and that level of commitment to it and not chicken out from it and go, maybe I should take a writing gig for a little while and compensate for this lack of work right now. Like, it's very hard to
believe
in my ability to do this. No, there's no shame in it at all, but it's very hard to strike that balance. I always say stand-up is like the Wild West because it's one of these it's so hard, or the comedy business in general and the entertainment business. It's like you can be nice to everybody, you can work your ass off, you can be really good at it for a really long time and be doing it, and it feels like now it's my time to get that thing, and then you just don't fucking get it. Like, there's no justice to it. There's no and then like some dude who's been doing it 6 months fucking does an hour, and you're like, how did that happen?
How did that fucking...
Well, you don't remember the ones that disappear. I have a hard time remembering, like, all the guys we came up with or whatever.
The guys who aren't around
anymore. It feels like everybody's still around in a way, but they aren't.
They're not. There's plenty of people that went by the wayside along the
way. Yeah, I mean, it's
there's also a lot of people who did take writing jobs.
Yes.
You don't see them in the clubs anymore. I'm always happy to go, oh, they're still in it. They're still in the business.
That, to me, is like, if you can get a writing job, that's fucking great.
It's great. Man. It is great, but
I
think the problem with those jobs, having done many of them, is there's a reality to how good you can get at something when you're not putting 100% of yourself into it. So it's like, I did a half hour special for Comedy Central in 2010, but I'm not embarrassed by it by any means, but I was working a full time job when I did it.
Right.
So how much of my energy was going into my job at the Daily Show versus my half hour. I could tell you 90% of my energy was going into the thing that was paying my bills.
Of course.
And 10% was going into the other thing. So, but you know, then I just recorded an hour like 2 months ago, and all I've done for the last like year plus is work on that hour.
Oh,
so
great.
I'm so much more proud of that hour than, but I, at the same time, like I'm not eating as nice a dinner, you know what I'm saying? Because well, like I don't have an eight, you know, so, so it's striking that balance of going, all right, well, look, I don't want to compensate right now for that other thing. I want to focus all my, I want to know if I put all my energy into this thing, how good could I get
at it? It's probably a happy medium though. There's probably a happy medium where you're, you know, you're getting income because the often the problem with stand-up is what does the future hold?
Yeah.
You know, what, you don't have anything. You're living in on a fucking futon in a studio.
In Ben Bailey's pool house.
Right, Ben Bailey's pool house.
Nobody lives there. There's no one living there.
There will be soon, Ben.
And so it's like you've got to have that, you've got to create that thing that's a future because it's you can create great jokes and great stories and great bits and do whatever, but it just, you can end up with nothing.
Yeah.
So that's the real. Well,
and we're all, we are all forced. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
But that's a really good point. I that's the thing, by the way, that if anything keeps me up at night, it's that. It's that it doesn't matter how good you are at it, how much potential you have,
I don't think that's true.
You don't think so?
I don't think that's true. I've had times when I've said that. Fuck this business. Fuck it all.
Who hasn't?
What am I doing? It doesn't matter how good I am. Somebody else is going to know a guy who knows a guy or, you know, it doesn't matter. But I don't think that's true. I think those people that we're talking about who were in this business with us when we started, who are no longer around, they didn't stay because they couldn't hack it. They weren't good enough to stick around. If you're good enough, you get to stay in the business. You get to work if it's, you know what I mean?
But
one way or another.
Yeah, I do think that that's true, but I also think that there is a...
I'm not saying it's totally fair.
What I'm saying
it's
is
not,
that I do think there's a luck and timing component to everything.
No doubt about it.
And I do
no
think
doubt
that
about
there's
it.
Certain times in the entertainment business. Like, I could tell you this. I came out of college at a time, it was 1999 when I graduated college, okay? And I landed a job at a fucking cable news parody show that nobody had watched as like a production assistant. So
that sounds awesome.
Sure. But had I done that, had I graduated 5 years earlier, that's just not going to happen because cable wasn't a thing. TV, like, in other words, you ever read Malcolm Gladwell's...
Tipping Point?
No, the other one. It's the one where he talks about the hockey players and how all hockey players are born in January, February, March. Do you ever read that book?
It's called Outliers.
It's called Outliers.
Outliers. I'm an outlier. I was born in October.
Right. And you're a hockey player. Okay. Yeah. So basically it talks about how hockey players, this is the opening chapter, but it's all about timing in life. It talks about like Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and all those guys who were the pioneers of Silicon Valley. They graduated or they went to college in a certain area. I think it was like Michigan. There was a certain area where those guys went to college where they had access to this supercomputer to learn, and all of the people who had access to that thing are now the heads of all of those companies. The hockey players. So in other words, it's not saying that talent can't rise out or
but
not,
there's but a little of that in comedy. If you were writing for The Onion or something like that, or
if you were the Harvard Lampoon when Conan became Conan,
right?
That period of time,
you got a writing job.
Boom, boom, boom. there was a 20-year period of time, and that's not to say those guys aren't brilliantly talented or anything else, but there was a farm system that was created because Conan more than deserved that opportunity, and Lorne Michaels saw his ability and all that. But my point is, there are just pockets of timing and things in the world. And like,
if you're a standalone, it's hard. If you're a standalone, you have a harder road ahead of you, no matter how good you are.
Yeah.
If you don't have the, not to say that if you don't have the connects or whatever, but you've got to be super industrious. You've got to create a variety of product, not just your stand-up. You've got to learn to market. Right. You've got to do all this shit.
That's what I was going to say before. Like, we all are divided. Our attention is divided now more than ever because you can't just be a stand-up.
You can't.
You have to also not just, maybe I should turn
the ringer
off
the phone. Hold on, we have a caller calling in.
You're all full of shit. Yeah.
Look, it says autistic child.
Well, there you go. He's like, I disagree with all of you.
Let's assume that that's a charity and not just an autistic child.
And AT&T was like, let's label him autistic child.
It's that guy from the Netherlands who doesn't like our audio.
Our attention is divided now more than ever because we also have to promote ourselves.
we have to do things like this.
Yes.
The podcast. Yep. You know, the
which fortunately is enjoyable.
Such, it is. It's great. It's great. I love it. I'm not complaining.
But you have to.
It's a focus that we're forced kind of into that's separate from stand-up. When we started out, when I started out, I lived and breathed stand-up.
Me too.
That's all I did.
That was it?
Every night of the week,
I
was in the clubs doing shows, and all day I was trying to come up with bits. That's it. Now, I don't have the time that I used to for that. You know, I have a fraction of the time
but it's not
that
enough
I could dedicate
either.
To
it's
that.
It's not enough.
What are you saying? I'm not as good as I used
well,
to be. No, you're making you're saying exactly the point that I'm making, which is what Rory was saying.
Yeah.
If your focus is on one thing completely, then your result is going to be better.
Yeah.
Now, we've gotten better at each aspect.
Yes.
I'm better at writing jokes and honing the jokes and knowing which ones are even worth putting the time into. So that makes up a lot. But we're all spread thinner than ever.
But I also...
And competing with 100 times more people than
we
were.
And that's the thing. That's the thing to me.
The numbers
are
crazy.
So for me, it's like I have this... I go back and forth with this whole social media thing. Like I wake up sometimes and go, look, if Instagram is the thing that's going to make people know me as a comedian, then maybe I'm just not going to be known as a comedian. Like that's how much I don't want to post what I'm eating for breakfast on Instagram. Like I just don't care. So it's really hard for me sometimes to go, well, you know, the market now you got like, you know, I'm on Twitter and I tweet jokes and they do well, but it's like, I can't then go now I got to put something on Facebook and here's a good one for Instagram. Let me Snapchat this. It's like,
well, that's your whole
I just
day.
Don't give a shit, but I also don't care. Like, and it's not that I don't care about, I care about my act being good, and I care about, like, if you come to see me, it's really good. But then there's this other part of me that goes, I don't want to spend a lot of my time telling people about how great I am. It feels very tacky and self-involved.
The way I deal
and
with
just
Instagram
feels like,
is, and because I'm not great at social media or anything like that, but I'm trying. I've tried
for a while. You know?
I try to look at it like... You're doing a little, you're creating just a little photo album of your fucking moments that you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So shit you might talk about on stage or stuff that you really like, you're just putting it out there in another way. That's the way I spin it in my mind.
Yep.
That's the way I spin it in my mind so that it's a little palatable, you know, so that it's like.
Yeah, I struggle with it. I wish I didn't struggle with it so much. And I also sometimes feel like, again, when you talk about timing, it's like I feel like. That stuff evolved at a point in my life where, like, it's weird. It's like, again, I worked in TV for so long that I'm like an old-fashioned producer mind. I'm like, come on, put some quality work into that. You're not going to just video something and put it out there.
I'm
and it's like, that's exactly what it is.
I'm
like, the
you,
whole vibe of Instagram goes against everything I learned to do, which is like, don't put it out until it's thought out, well-written, drafted,
it's like YouTube.
Edited. You know, it's like so all I did
people
for
crank
fucking
out these YouTube
15
videos.
Or like 13, 14 years of my life was work my ass off to make things fucking meticulously good. And now the whole culture has gone to like, fuck it, put it out. You know, and I'm like,
just shoot it and put it out there.
Right, and it doesn't mean it's not funny. I mean, and that's
but you can put out less that is more. Mm-hmm. You don't have to.
I know,
you
but
I have to post your fucking Cheerios every morning.
Right,
you can. You know, you have an the good thing about this, and I can't believe I'm the one that's saying it because
no,
I'm the most anti fucking social
media. Believe me,
but I'm saying the good thing about it is it's some. You know, I learned a lesson with fucking Instagram. Is I wrote a book and I shopped this book around. It was a really good book, and it basically
that's not what I heard.
Well,
I'd actually like to read it.
But the agent was like, "Look, you don't have an Instagram social media presence. You're up against guys with like 100,000 followers." Those guys are going to get the book deals or whatever. This is not
it's crazy, right, isn't it?
Nuts it doesn't
how it
really
changed.
Matter about that. It's a good book. It's a good fucking book. But it's going to be you're going. So I look at it like when you create little videos or when you create stuff like that, you just have a new way to put it out there.
Yep.
So make it good.
It's good.
Make
it's
it
bad.
Fucking good. You know,
but it's bad because it's so flooded. And there's so much crap that it's hard to see anything that you do.
Yeah.
But also,
but it's good because you have an outlet. You can produce your own stuff and send it right to your fans.
Yeah.
That's part
cool.
I like.
I like that part.
That
too.
Part is great.
Well, yeah, there's no middleman. There's no Merv Griffin like that. We're not going to put it on. You know, like that's not existing.
Exactly.
But you don't get bumped.
The
you know what I mean?
Well, there's no, the gatekeeper part of the industry is gone. And it used to be the Merv Griffins, the Dick Clarks, like in the music business. If those guys said that your single was going out, you became a famous musician.
Yeah.
Like they would,
like doing the
they would put
Show
a drop out of the, they would put a drop out of the faucet. And if you were somehow got into that, you know, there was 11 albums in a record store because that's all it could hold, and that was that. Now everyone has access to all music and all that stuff. You know, it's musicians get mad, you know, that they're not billionaires anymore, and it's like, well, whoever said a fucking guitarist is supposed to be a millionaire, man? You know, like, who made up that? It was like a 30-year window that those guys are driving, living in castles. Fuck you, that's over. But
there's 100,000 guitarists.
Yeah.
And there's a million. There's a million guitarists.
And you're competing with...
So that's changed also.
Right, yeah. And you're competing within comedy now. You're not just competing with guys who have been dedicating the last 20, 30 years of their life to mastering stand-up. You're competing with some dude in Ohio who's got like a trampoline in his backyard and he's jumping off his roof and bouncing in a pool and hitting his head and he's getting like 10 million views. Yeah. So you're and also there are a lot of funny people out there,
They go to clubs like, yeah, we had to book this guy because he sells out or whatever. But after 12 minutes, it was painful.
Yeah.
You know, the trampoline, how much trampoline can you do?
Right. It's like, it's really hard for me to get booked at a club because I don't sell tickets.
Yeah.
But if I was a YouTube star with no act, so again, I'm not bitter about that by any means, but it's like
sounds
dedicated 20 years. No, but it's like you have to start to realize that like you're not competing with other comedians anymore. Yeah, you're competing with everybody.
Asses in the seats.
Yeah,
that's all.
So it's an adapt or die business, man, and it's and the old way is just dead. So you have to find the new way.
It's true. The old way was like you don't do PR at all.
Yes.
You are the talent. You go in there and you be brilliant.
Cream rises and they'll find you.
And that's it. And then there's people that take care of all the rest of it.
You do a little blow with the club owner. And then that's it.
Now we have to be.
Waitress gives you a hand job in the back. You're good. Yeah.
Now I agree. Do everything.
And the expectation, too, for a comic before they show up to a club. Like, you know, I've gotten emails, hey, you got to tweet more. You know, it's I'm tweeting. How much tweeting about me? It's hard. It's really hard to like, I mean, I've gotten over that. It took me a while to get over it. But now I'm like, I'm at this club. I'm like putting out Facebook posts. And I'm like spamming about, and it's a headshot of me. Like, I'm in Cleveland this week. And I'm like, oh, God, it makes my skin crow. But what are you going
to
do?
You have to do it.
You have to do it. I've gotten used to that.
And then people get mad about that. People tweet to me like, all you do is promote your shows. I thought there would be funny, insightful humor on your Twitter. You know, I'm just like, well, now you know.
Yeah. Go hashtag yourself.
You want to laugh? You want to laugh?
To the show.
Come to the show.
I know, but that doesn't.
It's all free. All
that
of a
doesn't
sudden,
count
it's all
anymore.
Free.
And your timeline, by the way, has to get followers now on any of these things. You can't have like a one hit joke. They got to be able to scroll through your timeline and laugh like seven times.
Yeah,
in a row.
I don't know if I'll follow him. That's he had one funny thing a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, so there is a.
Sometimes I'm like, I'm going to post a lot. I'm just inspired to post stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm just not. It's the same as jokes.
Me too, man. If you look at any of my social media,
the material's not the same, but it's the same in that it comes in spurts and that's it. But if I don't feel like doing it, I can't do it. It's going to suck if I force myself to do it.
But it comes in spurts because you have other shit to do. That's the thing I always think about, which is like I have other things to do. So like there's just so much of my day. I'm like, all right, I got to write 5 Twitter jokes today and I got to put an Instagram. But it's like, I don't know. You know what I wish I had? I wish I had like a 22-year-old.
That's right.
Who just like was like, he has 6 Twitter jokes. I'm like, that's a good one. Put it like that's what like that's like,
yeah,
that's what I'm assuming.
An intern.
That's what I'm assuming some of the bigger name dudes who are kill it on social media have is like a little army of writers. And stuff.
Probably.
There's a reason talk show hosts have 10 or 12 writers. There's a reason.
Yeah.
Like, as funny as they are, you got to come up with a lot of jokes every day. So they may be contributing, but your brain is you know.
And you never know what's going to be big.
Yeah.
Like, what's your biggest tweet? Do you remember?
Maybe 500 retweets, and it was like...
No, but I mean, what did you say? What was it that you said?
It was probably just like a picture of my dick or something. You know, something great. No, I have no idea. I mean, every now and then I have like a... Like a snark. You know what I've done well with is replies. Because now that when you reply to somebody, somebody else's tweet, it shows up. So in other words, you don't have to like retweet and reply. You can just reply. And then, so I've had a couple of those like on Trump or somebody where I'm like, you sure about that? Or whatever it is, like some little snarky comment that is like very much in the wheelhouse of my comedic style. And like,
and then that catches on.
And then and I don't even think it's going to. I just do it because I'm like, I see it. I'm like, yeah, how about that? And then, you know, I've had a couple of those. And so now I'm going, maybe I should just do more of those replies because people see those and then you get, you know, more. But again, I think part of it for me is like, it's very hard for me to feel like, well, the goal is more followers, and with more followers comes more success. It's just, it feels
right.
so...
Right. It's not organic.
It doesn't feel organic.
Fully it's fully marketing-oriented. Yeah. It's not creatively driven, which it needs to be.
Right, but it actually doesn't. Actually, what it needs to be is marketing-driven, and I don't think that way, so I'm trying to sort of reprogram my brain and go, well, there's a, what do you call it, to this madness, like a fucking, there's a way to do it.
A method to that.
You're wrestling with that, and then you're wrestling with you are who you are. Like, you were telling us that story upstairs about, which really exemplifies you being who you are, about working at the day. What was that?
When you were working at the Daily
Show. Yeah, I was at the Daily Show. This is like...
Which, by the way, that must have been fucking awesome.
It was awesome, but there are components to having done that. I don't want to say I regret, because it was a great experience, but I do regret in time staying as long as I did, because you can get real cushy in a place where like, you got a good job. Like, I always wanted to be performing and doing stand-up, and I was doing it, but I was pretty lazy about it. There were plenty of nights I wasn't out hustling to do it, and like... I got a couple of those, though, don't you? By the way, so do you. But there's pros and cons to everything, right? I mean, the pros are I had some really good experiences. I learned a lot. I grew at the show. I mean, I started as a production assistant. I worked my way all the way through the building. I was there 14 years. I mean, I did every job in that building. I left as the executive producer. It was an incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was an incredible.
That's a fantastic career all by itself.
Yeah. Sure, but it's not the thing I had set out to do.
Right. And then I know that feeling.
So I look back on it and I go, oh, I'm glad I did that, but it sure as hell took a long time. Yeah. And I left. When I finally started actually like making money, I left because I was done. So it was like, it's not like I'm rich from it or anything. Like, it's like, you know, I had a good job over the years. So it was cool and I learned a lot and I don't regret it. I got to know Jon Stewart very well, but I don't.
Seems like a great guy, Stewart.
Awesome dude. Oh, absolutely awesome dude. But I do think I can tell you 100 reasons it wasn't great, but I did have some cool experiences, and this one was, but this is sort of a perfect example of like the way my mind works, and I also think the way comedians' minds work, which is spinning everything to like, nah, fuck that, that's garbage, you know. And Steve Jobs, and this is, I don't know, probably 2011, I mean, we could look, because it's right when the iPad, before the iPad was officially launched, he wanted to come in and show it off. I'm sure he went to Letterman and other talk shows too, but he wanted to come in and show it off to Jon Stewart with the hope of, we were like a cool culture show at the time and like we were relevant, so the hope of like, you know, you got a guy like that into it, maybe he's going to use it on TV, maybe he's going to talk about it, it's just going to put the word out that
he's trying to peddle his iPad.
Well, yes, that, and also whatever the, I'm sure there's I think if Steve Jobs was good at anything, marketing was on the list, and if anyone owns an iPod shuffle, they know what I'm talking about.
It's in a box somewhere in this room, the device that plays whatever it wants when it wants to.
Thanks, dude. Thanks. You're fucking jogging and like a Yanni tune comes on. Thanks.
Hilarious.
Thanks, man.
Although my regular iPod would do that once in a while.
Yeah, just on its own.
I'd be listening. I'm like, who the? How is this on there?
How is this even on my iPod?
Where did this come from?
But he comes in to show off the, and this isn't on air. This is just behind the scenes on like a Friday or somewhere, like a day in the middle of the week, and it's pretty exciting, man. Like, we got a lot of like celebrities rolling through the building to be on the show. But this is Steve Jobs like walking around the office in a black turtleneck. Like, it's about as cool as it gets. He's with his wife and like a couple of high level dudes from Apple.
He always wore a black turtleneck, right?
Yeah. That's a thing I've also read about that successful people do. Which is Zorro syndrome. But again, that's a branding thing. Like, that's also a black turtleneck. Well, no, just the cartoon character level of consistency in your outfit. Where like you wear
Giorgio Armani always wears a blue t-shirt. In fact, I bought this t-shirt
which is an off gray color, because whenever I'm sitting with you and Russ Maneev, I'm like, Jesus Christ, I'm always in a black t-shirt. The only difference is you guys have V-necks because you like have good bodies. But
I do it because it's easy. But I'm so tired of trying to pick out what I was going to wear.
No, black t-shirts.
Like the fly, like Seth the Brundle fly is the in Jeff Goldblum has the same fucking jacket and the same fucking pants, so he doesn't have to choose.
But that's
Einstein.
But that is Einstein. There's a theory behind that, and like it's I think there's like a Japanese artist who like came up with this methodology. Yeah. Steve Jobs fully bought into it. I actually have worked on that. Again, when you talk about going on the road for stand-up, first of all, black T-shirts, you can't see me sweating in.
Yes,
so it's like,
on
and
the
I
road.
Sweat a lot.
Yes.
So it's like easiest thing to pack. I got like 7 of the exact same ones. Throw them in my suitcase, a pair of jeans.
If it's fancy, you get the Louis Schaefer navy blazer to cover it up.
And boom, you're done. Yeah, like,
and you're done.
Yeah. But so he came in to show off the
We're
iPad, and
shit.
He went into John's office to like sit with him and for a while, and I was out there with the Apple people like that were with him, and then we were demoing it and looking at it, and then it was cool because John actually asked me to give him a tour around the building, which was I've never seen people's heads explode more in my life because I was just walking into, you know, we had like big graphics. It's still there. I'm just not there, anymore. But there's a big graphics room with all these graphics artists on Macs. You know, they're all working on graphics for the day. And I bust open the room. I'm like, hey, guys, I don't want to interrupt. Steve Jobs wanted to take a look. And they were like, you know?
Right. And he's like, what are you guys using? Like, you know, Adobe fucking.
And they're like, yes, Mr. Jobs, you know? And, you know, people are freaking. Yeah, people are just freaking the fuck. And I'm just sort of showing him around the building, and he's asking me legitimate questions. He's looking at our Avids. You guys are run what you know what Mac, you know what Mac are you running on that and blah blah blah. So it was a pretty cool day for me.
That's
and,
cool,
and then
man.
We and
that's,
then and then you know he leaves and I'm in John's office with a couple of the other guys and we're talking about it. I go, I gotta tell you, man, because he left one. I go, John, I gotta tell you, this fucking thing is not gonna catch on. I was like, I don't know what this guy's thinking. I'm like, who the hell want? What is this? It's not a phone. It's not a TV. What am I gonna do with this? I'm gonna walk around with a flat screen and hit buttons. Come on. I'm like, this is the next Newton. I'm like, this guy screwed up again, boy. That was like, I always tell people that story. Like, anytime I make a good point, people are like, oh, you know what you're talking about? I'm like, let me tell you why I actually don't know what I'm talking about.
Just keep in mind that I could be totally wrong.
Completely. It's that, I told you.
But you sound
that,
convincing.
Yeah,
you
it's that convincing. Albert Brooks scene in Defending Your Life when he's sitting with that Japanese guy who's his buddy, and he's telling him, hey, man, my uncle's starting this company called Casio. You can get it on the ground floor. It's the IPO. And Albert Brooks is like, come on. The Japanese don't make watches. The Swiss make watches. You know? And then he said he invests in cattle, and they all die.
And they all die. I love that movie.
And had you put $10,000 in a Casio watches, how much would it be worth today? $4.3 billion. You know, like some absurd amount of money.
That movie, that's one of my favorite movies. There's so many great parts of that movie.
Because it's a false philosophy towards life, and it's so perfect. I mean, he's a nervous wreck who lives by fear, and therefore in the purgatory afterlife.
He fails.
How
great is Rip Torn in that?
Rip Torn is
he's great at everything.
Talk about a dude that Loggia level actor. Rip Torn, he's so great in Larry Sanders.
Oh, that Larry Sanders show. He was so fucking awesome.
Nobody says fuck better than Rip Torn.
Dude, and he's always sitting there. Like, we nailed it. You know, and it's like no matter how bad it was.
And
he's like,
he has the Bailey eyebrow, too. He does the Bailey eyebrow.
Yeah, you're right.
That movie, Defending Your Life, is so good. And man, like just the joke, the juxtaposition between his nervous, like, you know, Woody Allen level anxiety lifestyle versus Meryl Streep. Like he sneaks into Meryl Streep's screening at the end, and she's saving a cat from a fire.
She's rescuing a cat from a burning house.
And they're all clapping, you know, and then the judges are like, I'm sorry to make us see that again. We just had to see it
one
more time.
They're just in love with her.
And all, and
she's
all,
clearly moving on.
You call her a prosecutor? What do you call her? Gail? You know? Movie's fantastic.
Yeah. It's so good. Just the idea of like Judgment City and the afterlife where like the food is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's ready in no time.
Yeah,
you don't get fat.
And Rip Torn, and the percentage of your brain that you use. And Rip Torn's eating that food, and he's like, what are you eating? He's like, you won't like it.
You wouldn't understand.
And then he tries it, and he goes, kind of tastes like horse shit, doesn't it? Because his brain's too small.
Still don't get the big brain bit. I love that movie.
Fantastic.
You know what's one of my favorite things about that movie is if you would go and rent that movie at a video store or actually get a hard copy of it on DVD or whatever, on the box, it would say, there's a review from Siskel and Ebert.
Wow.
And it says, finally, a realistic movie about life after death.
That was their take.
I'm like, are you fucking... These guys, movie critics, think they're God, literally.
Yeah, believe me, we know what's up there.
Yeah, how the fuck do you know?
Actually, oddly, now they both do know.
Yeah, that's so funny.
I wonder if they're up there like, boy, were we wrong.
Eating the best omelet they ever had.
Yeah, or they're not. They're like, this sucks.
This is not what we expected.
And they're arguing.
All.
Yeah.
That's a great movie. If you haven't seen Defending Your Life,
yeah, it's one of Albert Brooks' best.
It's great. I think it is his best.
Yeah, I think
it is. I like The Muse a lot.
Yeah, The Muse is good. I think it is his best, probably. But yeah, you're right, by far. It's very funny.
You know, his real name is Albert Einstein.
Oh, that's right. You know, yeah. His brother. You know who his brother
Super
is?
Dave yes. Yeah. Super Dave Osborne.
Super Dave Osborne. Yeah. Yeah. Super Dave, man.
Those guys are both hilarious.
Yeah, but yeah. Super Dave doesn't get the acclaim he, you know, deserves.
I feel he deserves more
respect.
He
was on Letterman a lot. Not more respect. It's just like his name's not thrown around. There were always guys like that. They don't really exist anymore. Like the Father Guido Sarducci's, the Super Dave Osborne. Yeah. Those dudes, I guess Judah.
Great characters.
I guess Judah's kind of doing that like now, right? Like he's living that character as the world champion, yeah. You know that. But I can't think of anyone else who's really
the coach guy, the guy who did that bit with all the different. He puts on a helmet.
Oh, Bob Nelson.
Bob Nelson.
Yes. Yeah.
Bob Nelson lost it, dude. I once heard that about
Bob Nelson.
I did a week at the Borgata.
Yeah,
it was me and Bob Nelson, and he went very religious.
It happens to a lot of people.
And would actually preach about it in his shows until people were like, well. Dude, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So then he would refrain from doing it. But he was so competitive with me. And I love the guy.
Yeah.
Like, I remember that HBO Young Comedians thing where he did the whole football team.
He had an hour special on HBO.
Yeah,
After that, where that was a part of it. That was the one he's running around and he's popping his head out the window. Mom, I need some toilet paper! Oh, I must have watched that special.
He was so
it's one of the first
funny.
HBO hour specials, I think.
Yeah. So I go to the Borgata. It's me and Bob. We both have merch to sell. We're there for the whole run. Like, you used to do Sunday to fucking Monday. Full 7-day week.
Oh, you're doing like a week.
Trapped in where you can't
it's
open
only
the
20 minutes a night, but you got to be there. You got to do every single night.
Yeah.
And then he's so competitive with me that he was like, I have to close. And I'm like, I don't care, man. Yeah. We're doing 20 minutes.
You're both doing
20? Yeah. I go, you could close if you want. He's like, thanks. So then I would go up and do my set. And then after, he would come on and he would say, by the way, Ben and I are both selling merchandise after the show. But Ben has a CD which has no video.
No way.
Mine is a DVD which has video, and I don't swear. Maybe you don't like to hear swear words like some people do, but Ben swears on it. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? What is this guy doing, man?
That's bananas.
Oh, wow.
He was out there, man. He had kind of lost it a little bit.
Yeah, I've heard
that. But I got to know him, and he told a really funny story about he opened for Rodney. Wow. On the road for years.
Oh, wow.
He was Rodney's
go-to
opener.
Dude, I've heard some crazy Rodney stories.
And Rodney apparently never, ever didn't have a joint in his mouth. No matter where he was, he could have been at the fucking bank.
Really?
He was smoking
stoned
a joint.
All the time.
Stoned and smoking no matter where he was or what he was doing. Like grocery store, pharmacy, bank.
Oh,
doesn't matter. He was wearing a fucking
bathrobe.
Starting
to see why he doesn't get respect. You know?
He was wearing a bathrobe and smoking a joint.
The bathrobe thing I heard a ton about. That's like down in Dangerfields. People always told me that like when he was there.
He always had a robe.
He was always in his bathrobe and it was like open and he was wearing like boxes underneath.
That's
and he was
great.
Like doing blow.
So Bob Nelson is telling me that over the years of working with Rodney, he developed an impression of Rodney that was so good that he could fool Rodney's wife.
What?
He could call and leave a message for her as Rodney, and she wouldn't know.
That's fantastic.
So Rodney would tell him to do it. He'd be like, call my wife. Tell her I'm not coming home until Thursday. You know, whatever. And then Bob would do it. He would call and he'd leave a message, and Rodney wouldn't have to deal with it. But the problem was that Bob Nelson got so caught up in the impression of Rodney that he couldn't stop. And it got to the point where his wife, Bob Nelson's wife, said to him, literally, if you don't stop talking to me like Rodney Dangerfield, I'm going to divorce you.
Wow.
And I go, Jesus Christ, what did you do? He goes, the temptation to be like, oh, take it easy, was overwhelming. He goes, I almost threw my marriage away.
Yeah, I'm Stephen Court.
Yeah. Whoa, hey, settle down.
Call your lawyer.
And by the way, don't say Jesus Christ.
That's so funny.
Wow, that's awesome.
Sick. That's that Seinfeld episode, remember? Where he's doing like, hello, and he's dating that girl.
Oh, yeah,
and she's like, if you say that again, we're done. And then he goes to the pier and he thinks about it. And then he knocks on her door and she opens it and he goes, hello.
And he's like, he couldn't give it up.
Goodbye. And then he comes home and they're not doing it anymore. And he's like, wait, we're not doing that anymore? I just broke up with my girlfriend over this. Him and all his friends were doing that bit, you know.
Well, it's like the movie Magic with Anthony Hopkins where he's got the marionette.
I've never seen that.
He's got the puppet, not marionette, he's a ventriloquist.
Right.
And it eventually takes over, dude. It eventually, like, there's no, you know.
He can't separate.
He can't separate from it. And it's like, and it turns at him. It's like, yeah. You know, it's like, it's.
That was the same. What's that called?
Magic.
That was the same premise of the movie The Beaver. Remember that? With The Beaver with Mel Gibson. It came out like maybe six, 7 years ago.
And he has seen that, though. It was like a comeback
after people realized he was like an anti-Semite and like yells at Jewish slurs at people. And he did this like fun. Jodie Foster directed it. And it's Mel Gibson has a puppet beaver on his hand.
Are you fucking kidding
me?
And he can't.
It's actually not as bad as it sounds, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And
it couldn't possibly be as bad as it sounds.
He can't not.
How did it get made?
I think he has to, like, I don't want to. You know what? Fuck it. I will spoil it.
Ruin it.
I think he has to cut his hand off at the end. I think, like, the end result is, like, he has to remove the beaver from his hand to get his sanity.
That shit is so crazy. That's fucking weird, but it sounds like the same. Not being able to stop doing the voice. Yeah. I do that with my wife. Hopefully she's not going to divorce me, but I have. They're characters in our life.
Totally.
And I get up in the morning and I do them. And she's just like, she's so fucking over it, but she's just found a way to tune it out. But then I do it as a vocal warm up.
Yeah, with my girl. I do the same. I get caught in these voices.
I just start talking in them.
Oh, I do that all the time.
No, it's okay, love.
Yeah.
She just looks at me like, you sound like my uncle. Yeah. Fuck off. You're supposed to be the man that I live with and love.
Yeah. I also find that there are things you can do like that, and then what I find hard not to do, like I do stuff like that with my girlfriend, but I do find sometimes hard not to do it like in public. Like that's where I struggle, where I'm like, oh, I shouldn't say it that way in front of other people. You know what I mean? Like I'll do like mildly offensive accents about things. I shouldn't probably say this in this cab, you know?
I have recently, you mean like talking to strangers?
Yeah, just mean like I'm like doing like a-
I started doing that. I realized that I lost the filter or I no longer care.
Yeah.
And I'll just speak to a person like I don't
Australian
know
accent.
In an accent.
Yeah, me too. It's actually fun. I
say to a cabbie, like, thank you, that was wonderful.
Yeah, right.
And then I'm like, get out. I'm like, what the fuck's wrong
with you? Why did I do that?
You cash cab bastard. You goddamn Ben Ben.
I could be in front and you in the back, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Well, we got to wrap it up. It's been a great episode. Thank you.
Yeah, it's fun
Rory
talking to you,
Albanese.
Guys,
your new special. Where can people see it?
I'll tell you about the next time. I was supposed to be on Showtime, and now I'm having some. Back door.
It's pending.
Now I'm having some post issues with the production team who did it, so I'm figuring that out.
Oh, okay.
I'll know where it's coming out soon.
What's your website? You have a website?
Yeah, it's just RoryAlbanese.com, and I'm on Twitter. Everything's just my name.
Everything is Rory, R-O-R-Y, Albanese.
A-L-B-A-N-E-S-E. I could have changed it to like Rory Star or something, but I didn't.
You know, your last
stayed ethnic.
An adjective.
I stayed ethnic, you know.
And do you have any dates you want to plug?
Now this summer I'm just working on a pilot and hanging in around New York City. My dates don't start up to like October, so I'm not going to plug it now.
All right, good deal. Well, thanks for being on the show, man. Yeah.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for having me, guys. It was super fun.
We'll do it again one time, man.
Yeah, I'd love to.
As far as I'm concerned, you can figure out where I'm going to be by going to therealbenbailey.com. And I can tell you about a couple of dates. August 11th and 12th, I'll be at the Funny Bone in Liberty Township, Ohio. I'll be at Arlington Draft House in Arlington, Virginia, August 18th and 19th, September 1st. Laughs by the Lake in Irving, Texas, September 15th. Arts Quest Center at Steel Stacks in Bethlehem, PA. Treehouse Comedy Club, Westport, Connecticut, September 23rd. Starland Ballroom right here in New Jersey, Sayreville, September 29th. Comedy Shop in Pompton Plains on September 30th. Good God, I got a lot of dates here. October. I should be happy. I'm like, this is a lot of work.
Right.
I'm like, I don't want to do all these.
I'm just going to call my agent after the video. Look at fucking Ben Bailey's website.
Funny Bone in Syracuse, New York, October 20th and 21st. New Hope Cinema Grill, New Hope, Minnesota, November 10th and 11th. December 8th and 9th, Hartford Funny Bone in Manchester, Connecticut. Please come out to a live show. Please subscribe to Tall But True if you haven't already. Post a good comment if you like the show. If you don't, keep your mouth shut. DC Benny, where
can I don't know how I'm going to follow that, bro.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize. I was just reading from my website.
You got to plug them. I'm just the real DC Benny. I'll post on Instagram my dates or tweet it. And we have next week.
All right, August 9th.
August 9th.
Tall But True live at the Fat Black Pussycat in New York City. Come check that out.
Yes, survival. Stories of survival.
It's going to be fucking awesome.
All right, so thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys, for listening to Tall But True. We'll be back with another great episode next week. Thank you.